Hi there, I'd like to welcome Melchior. He's a consulting engineer at Juniper Networks, and he will talk about demystifying quantum key distribution. In his presentation, he will explore how quantum key distribution works and how it can be leveraged in existing security mechanisms. He will also explain some of the terminology, principles, and what a quantum internet is. If you have any questions, please ask them via the question option on the live stage, and I will bring them at the end to Melchior. So, Melchior, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me, the Enoch. Compliments for the waiting music. My name is Melchior. I work with Juniper as a consulting engineer, and I'm part of a study group in Juniper that's looking into how we can make quantum applicable to networking. And I figured as a learning exercise for myself as well, I figured I tell you something about it, give you a little introduction into quantum and what it is. And we'll also talk about one of the, let's say, most applicable or most realistic applications currently for quantum, that is quantum key distribution. So we'll look at how it works and how to make it applicable and how to leverage it in, for example, MACSEC and IPSEC. But before we do that, we first need to understand some of the terminology and what is so unique about quantum and why it could be interesting for us to look into. A small disclaimer, I am not a physicist. I haven't studied physics as well. So I will only scratch the surface. To just get some baselining on many of the slides, there are links to reading more information, whether it's Wikipedia or YouTube, etc. So I highly recommend, if you're interested in the subject, to look those up as well. So there's basically three fields of quantum that are of interest to us as network engineers. The first, a random number generator, in a call or a router or on a server that uses quantum aspects or quantum properties to generate randomness, basically. And that randomness you can then use in urandom or random, for example, on Linux. Why want to discuss the random is much higher than you can get urandom, for example. So the second field of interest is using quantum properties to distribute data. In this case, it's distributing key material, but going forward in the future, you can imagine that it's probably possible to also send real data using polarized photons. I'll get to what a polarized photon is. A bit of interest post quantum cryptography, security protocols and mechanisms against attacks from quantum computers. As you probably have heard by now, once we really see quantum computers happening in large scale, then many of the security algorithms we're using are vulnerable to that. So that immediately leads me to the problem statement. What is actually the issue or the problem we're trying to solve with quantum key distribution? Many of the protocols like MACSEC, to secure links between network equipment, are using AES 256 to encrypt that data traffic. And AES 256 in itself is pretty resistant, or expected to be resistant, against attacks from quantum computers. And the thing is that if at one point a quantum computer is able to actually factor that key, then you simply double the key size and you're good for another couple of years. The issue is in the way you distribute the keys between the different routers or different endpoints. It is described as Shor's algorithm, which is a algorithm that can run on a quantum computer, and that basically is really good in factoring prime numbers. As you might recall, many of the security protocols we're using are based on prime numbers. And obviously multiplying prime numbers is pretty easy, but factoring prime numbers is really hard, especially for a, as the physicists refer to, a classical computer, or in other words, the computers we are using. And it is expected that at one point a quantum computer becomes powerful enough to run this Shor's algorithm, and keyboard vulnerable those algorithms. So we need to come up with a different way of distributing that key material. But before we go into that, what is it and what isn't it? I mentioned already quantum computers and some aspects like photons. Everything we are discussing today in this presentation has nothing to do with quantum computers. If you would want to start using quantum key distribution, you don't need a quantum computer. The only thing we're using is an aspect or some of the serving position, and we are transporting that to another device, but we're not using quantum computers itself, so we don't need all the high cooling and so with quantum or whatever spooky again quantum aspects to transport key material. So that is to set some perspective. So let's look at what is actually that quantum being a classical, we currently know them, that is zero state. In quantum, we're using qubits, and a qubit or quantum bit can be zero and one, just as the classical bit, but also everything in between. And that everything in between, that is what is called the superposition. In this case, we're using photons. You can also use electrons. That's a different way of building or using quantum aspects. But we're using photons. So what you do, in again, in very basic terms, you take a photon, you take a laser, and you put the photon into a sort of superposition. In other words, you give it a spin, as they call it. The way you spin it, you can do that in several positions. For QKD, those positions are either 0, 45, 90, 135 degrees. A few slides down this presentation, we'll look at why those are interesting and what you can do with those superpositions. Probably the most interesting aspect of a qubit is that you cannot copy it, where obviously a classical bit you can copy, even a photon carrying information in a classical system you can amplify in a CWDM or DWDM system. In quantum, you cannot do that. So obviously for security, or if you're using qubits or quantum in security, that's a big plus. The downside is, as I mentioned, you cannot use it in CWDM or DWDM. So the practical distance of a, in this case, QKD solution is limited to around 120, 160 kilometers, which could be perfectly fine if your data centers are close to each other, but if you're 200 or 400 or even further kilometers away, that could become a problem. There is a solution that is not using fiber, but that is using free space, in other words, using satellites. And obviously, in that case, you can span much bigger distances. However, then you would need satellite receivers and a satellite being up in the sky. So there's pros and cons. The copying of a qubit is something the physicists are working on. In other words, they are trying to build a quantum repeater, which is basically what we know as an amplifier in, again, an optical system. But they're not there yet. As I mentioned, superposition, I already described most of it, but the superposition can be compared as in what we are hearing in a daily in our daily lives. If you listen to music, for example, what you hear is always a combination of multiple audio waves, and you could sort of compare a superposition to that. So, as I mentioned, a qubit can be a zero and a one, or one, and they can be a zero and a one at the same time, or anything in between. The interesting thing is you only know what a superposition it had if you measure it. So if you observe the photon and you measure it, then it'll collapse in either zero or one state. Again, this is just scratching the surface. There's a link down here to read further. Just explaining what a superposition is could be a class of a couple of hours probably. But one of the things you can do with those photons in superposition is to transport information to the other side. Or if you, there's a mechanism that's called entanglement. In that case, you bring two photons really close together. That is already possible in the laboratories of the universities, for example. If you bring them really close together, they sort of copy the state of the other photon. And then if you take them apart and you measure photon on one side, the other side will collapse into exactly the same state. So if you measure on the left side that it's a one, then the other photon will always collapse into a one as well. And that is called teleportation. So although in movies, teleportation is referred to transporting physical objects, that is not possible yet. But you can transfer information by using those aspects. I already touched on some of the advantage and challenges of quantum. Again, obviously an advantage is the no cloning principle. So you cannot copy a photon. Means that if the other side receives the Bob side receives a photon that Alice has sent, then it can only be unique, else the superposition would have already been collapsed, and then if you measure it, there's no quantum state measure anymore. If you're using this in security, then you are using physics over math. So instead of calculating a key with a prime number, etc., that is always a risk, because if you can calculate something, there's always someone else with a bigger or faster computer that can also calculate that. Physics, you cannot calculate, obviously. We'll get to how we leverage that exactly, but you can imagine that if you cannot calculate it, it's much harder to interfere or eavesdrop. I also mentioned some of the challenges already. Three of the biggest challenges are decoherence. In other words, how long can a photon be in that superposition? That is something the physicists are working on as well currently. I'm not sure on the exact current state, but a photon can keep its superposition for a couple of minutes currently. So you can imagine that it's really hard. Currently, it's only usable for real-time applications. The other thing is fidelity. Fidelity is basically the quality of the qubit itself. In other words, if you, as I mentioned, measure or observe the photon at one side, the other side collapses into the same position. That is in theory always true. In practice, that is not always true. In many cases, even it's not always true. The lower the fidelity is, obviously, the less reliable the information and the entanglement is. So obviously, if you want to use this in a large scale system or transporting more data, then the fidelity needs to go up as well. And scaling is an issue because the rate of transporting data currently is comparable to when we were using dial-up modems to connect to what was then referred to as the internet or a bulletin board system. So this, the speed is still really slow. that entanglement I mentioned, currently you can only entangle two photons. So if you want to obviously scale this out or do this in a multi-point fashion, then you would need to be able to scale much more wider and further. So let's look at some of the terminology you might have heard in the media or have read about quantum networking and quantum internet. There is no quantum internet yet, sorry to say, but what there currently is a quantum network, and that is most comparable as to a peer-to-peer network where two hosts connect to each other using a dark fiber or, as I mentioned, a satellite, and are able to send a few photons from one side to the other that are in a superposition. Obviously, the distance I mentioned, the 120 kilometers, is an issue as well that we need to overcome. So there are some working theories and physicists are working on in the labs of how to actually go from a quantum network to a quantum internet. One idea is to use something that is called an entanglement swap, where Alice and Bob entangle a photon and Bob and Charlie entangle photons, and then Bob does a so-called swap action. And by doing so, Alice and Charlie will have a entangled photon. This is somewhat comparable to, for example, how MPLS work, or at least overlay networking, where you build an overlay network over several hops. But this is pretty much only in theory currently there. So for now, a quantum network or quantum internet will look a bit like this picture, where end nodes will always still have a classical link. The physicists all refer to whatever we're doing as being classical. So classical networking is the way we know networking. So an end node will have a classical link and a dark fiber or a quantum link. There are ideas and some companies are working on combining those on the same fiber, but that is still not really there in practice. So some applications where you could use quantum in networking is obviously if you need exact states at the same time at different places, in other words, for clock synchronization, access to resources, telescope baselining, obviously in the future communication between quantum computers and sharing memory in quantum computers. But the only application that is really currently here and available, there's commercial parties building these QKD applications and boxes. So that is mainly because the fidelity is high enough and QKD doesn't need that much bandwidth. So let's how that quantum key distribution actually works and repeat why we would need that. As I mentioned in public key cryptography, the mechanisms Alice and Bob are using to send data and encrypt data in between each other are pretty good. The issue is how to share that key, right? In many situations, we're still using email, or you could use snail mail or fax or whatever, SMS, WhatsApp, to distribute that key, but that is not really secure. And the protocols we've developed to do that, Diffie-Hellman, for example, are vulnerable to attacks from quantum computers. So the only way, the only security protocols that are safe are those based on symmetric key cryptography, where Alice and Bob know the key, but they do not have to share the key with each other because they already knew it. Then the only thing we need to fix is how are Alice and Bob going to communicate that key? So in other words, if you look at the right side, the symmetric cryptography we're using based on AES is quantum safe or expected to be quantum safe. However, what you see on the left side, the public key cryptography algorithms we're using, like our, say, separable to quantum computers. So now use quantum aspect property in QK, use the keys you communicate with the system, in the, for example, in MACSEC or IPSEC, or even what I talked about a couple of DNOPs ago, TCP AO, for example. Basically, using QKD. I already mentioned how something like that should work. And there's two gentlemen, Bennett and Brassard, who came up with a protocol and a way how you can use those quantum aspects to distribute those keys between two nodes. They did that in 1984, hence the protocol is called BB84. So imagine you have two hosts, Alice and Bob, and in QKD, it's always Alice sending photons to Bob. So Alice has a laser polarizing photons, and Bob has a photon detector that can detect the superposition of a photon. So there we go. Alice is sending starts sending polarized photons to Bob. And as you can see, the arrows are indicating the quantum position of those, or the quantum state of those photons. In other words, 0 degrees, 45 degrees, 135 degrees, 45 degrees again, 135, etc. She uses a quantum channel to do that, which is basically a dark fiber. As I mentioned, you cannot, in current state, you cannot amplify that. So it's a dark fiber between the box on Alice's side and Bob, box on Bob's side. And Bob receives those photons and has, as I mentioned, the photon detector, so he can measure the states of the photons, as he does, and he stores that information. Then, because Bob doesn't know upfront which polarization Alice used to send the photon, he's applying random filters to the information he receives. And the random filter will either pass 0 or 90 degrees, or 45 and 135 degrees polarized photons, as you can see the cross and the plus, the cross and the plus signal. Alice will do the same. And then if you go through that, some measurements will pass the filter and some will give an error, right? If you try to push a 45 degree polarized photon through a 0 or 45 degree filter, then obviously your measurement is false. As you can see in the first measurement on Alice's side, successfully passes. The second, she's trying to push the 45 degree polarized photon through a 0 or 90 degree filter. And then obviously you will get an error rate, an error reading. Bob does the same. So some photons will successfully pass and some will error. Now, if both share the filters they've used, and you can use a public data channel, because the filter, you still don't know. They exchange those filters, and now if they overlay the filters, you see that in some cases you will get a valid result, and in some cases you will get a false result out of that measurement. Now, if you sift through the results, you see that some the photons that pass the filter will carry information, in this case 0101, and obviously then that results in your shared key. The reason why this is so secure, that if you would have an eavesdropper on the quantum channel, that will need to apply the same filters, but obviously the eavesdropper doesn't know which filters Bob and Alice have used. So you can sift through, you can filter the results and you get outcomes. But as you can see, Alice and Bob also received outcomes from error measurements. So an eavesdropper has no idea which measurements are actually true. Then you would also need, obviously, the filters Alice and Bob have used. So this is considered pretty secure. There's alternatives to this protocol as well, and there's newer protocols, but this is the basics of how to use those quantum aspects to carry key information between two nodes. So now how are we going to use that? our Alice and Bob routers are still using our AES-256 based protocol to encrypt the data, but the way they receive the keys is different. So they're not using Diffie-Hellman or RSA or any other key distribution mechanism. They are getting keys from a QKD device. And the way they fetch those keys is by leveraging a protocol that is defined by ETSI, which is called ETSI, the ETSI QKD REST API. And you can basically pull that and request key material. So then how it works. As I mentioned, Alice and Bob both have a QKD device. Alice, her device is sending photons. Bob, his device is measuring the photons. And obviously they both have a router on site as well. And between those devices, there's three channels. Two channels are used for the QKD devices. One is the dark fiber, the quantum channel. And the other is the data communication channel that they use to exchange those filters. And the third channel is between the routers, which is just an Ethernet link, which is secured by MACsec or IPsec, or could be, as I mentioned, the BGP session authenticated by TCP/AO that is leveraging that key material as well. Now, our Alice router wants to get a key. As I mentioned, the ETSI REST API is defined for that. So she sends a request to Alice QKD, and Alice QKD sends back a key and a key ID. Alice installs the key in whatever protocol she has, the key tuple, key or whatever. She sends the key ID unencrypted to Bob, because with the key ID, you cannot really do anything. Bob then uses that key ID to request the same key, or hopefully the same key, obviously, from Bob. Key back, Bob router can use those keys in, again, MACsec, IPsec, or any other protocol. There's couples who have already done some proof setting. So ask your favorite networking vendor. They're probably working on this already. Done some tests also with some telcos who are interested in this, either securing their own lines or offering this to their customers. And I'm pretty sure other vendors are looking into this as well. So how is this applicable? As I mentioned, these solutions are available. There's, for example, ID Quantique, there is KeyQuant, there is ARKit, there's many vendors working on this, working on not KQD, but QKD. I see now that I misspelled on my slide. But so you can get systems from them and you can start using those keys in any symmetric key algorithm or protocol or whatever, like MACsec, IPsec, TCP/AO, etc. The keys are made available, as I mentioned, using a by ETSI defined REST API. There is quite some emulators and simulators on the internet as well. So if you want to start playing with it, you can download a simulator that exposes the REST API. Obviously, you won't get quantum generated or quantum distributed keys, but you can get a feeling of how it works. And then the question, what's next? There's quite a few challenges to overcome. As I mentioned, the 120 kilometer distance, for example, quantum repeaters. Can you use, for example, SD-WAN based on a post-quantum security protocol? Should it be satellites? How to also use those keys in locations where you do not have QKD boxes present, for example, for remote workers or home workers? What about multi-point VPNs, for example? There's quite some challenges, but the first steps are here. And I think in the next 5 years, we'll probably see much more of this. We'll probably see much more applications as well. But I hope you have a sort of an idea now of what is coming. If you're interested, as I mentioned, there's quite a few links on the slides. Here's a couple of links as well. There's some work in IETF, in the Quantum Internet Research Group. Other standards bodies like ITU, ETSI are working on it as well. So there's quite some really good material also on YouTube to find, for example, as well. If you have any questions, I can take them now if time permits, or else feel free to find me on email or LinkedIn or Twitter, etc. Thank you.
Yeah, Rachel, thank you very much for that talk. We're a little bit over time, but I would like to ask two questions from the chat anyway. No, not a problem. One question was, could you please elaborate on partially leveraging DWM?
Yeah, so what you can do is using 1510 or what is it, 13 something, the other channel that is used in let's say gray DWDM systems. In that case, you can combine on limited scale with other light sources. But the thing is that your distance will be much lower, of goes down a lot as well because of interference. So yes, in limited scale, you can do QKD over CWDM, DWDM, but you will run into other issues.
Okay, thank you for that answer. And another question would be, what is the maximum throughput available with quantum transmission channels? Can reach 100K or 100 megabits or 100 gigabits, or so, just as an, you know, an idea?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure about the exact number, but keep in mind, as I mentioned, we are with this at a state where you could compare it with your dial-up modem. So do not expect to send any pictures or even stream the ENOC over a quantum infrastructure now. But probably that is going to happen, obviously, in the future. But currently, it's a few kilometers, if I'm correct.
Okay. And are there any real-life production networks right now using it already?
I can obviously not speak for the Qubers. They will claim that there's production networks. What I've been involved in is main POCs with telecoms, so telecom providers, and some of the cloud providers, but those were all in POC.
Okay, thank you very much for all of that insights. There were some little more questions. If you want, you can follow up in extra channel on the left side about that talk with the audience. And for the audience, you can either follow up in the side channel or wait for the next talk on the main stage. So thank you very much, Melchior, and all to you. Have a nice day.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.